Hi everyone, this is Catherine Hollander from GiveWell. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate you taking some time out of your day to learn about our work and to ask us questions. I'm a senior research analyst focused on outreach at GiveWell. And before we get started, I just want my colleagues who are joining me here to quickly introduce themselves.
Hi all, this is Natalie Crispin and I'm a senior research manager here at GiveWell.
I'm Ellie Hassenfeld, GiveWell's co-founder and executive director.
I'm Josh Rosenberg. I'm a senior research manager.
Great. So this call will be 1 hour long. We're going to make some very brief remarks at the beginning about our latest research and what we work on at GiveWell, and then we'll open up the floor for questions. We received a number of pre-submitted questions or topics of interest, so we're also planning to cover those. And if we run out of time to get to a question that you've shared, we will aim to follow up via email. Just to briefly recap how to ask a question, this is also an email that we shared with call-in details. We are planning to and have muted all participants to maintain a reasonable audio quality on this call. So the two ways to ask questions, one is via the chat interface in Zoom, if you've joined us via Zoom. And the other is to email info@givewell.org that you have a question. Please write out your question for logistical reasons and to maintain audio quality. We won't be unmuting you on the call. I will plan to read your name. If you don't want your name to be shared when I read your question, please just say so when you submit your question. Finally, we generally default to publishing information publicly while being willing to keep information confidential when specific parties request it. And so consistent with this, we're planning to record this call and to post the recording and possibly a transcript on our website. And if you ask a question that you'd like us to remove, please just let us know by emailing info@givewell.org and we'll be happy to do so. Before we jump into questions, I'm going to give just a very brief summary of what GiveWell is, if you're joining us and you're using GiveWell. And then my colleague Natalie will speak a little bit about our updated top charities. GiveWell is a nonprofit dedicated to finding outstanding giving opportunities. We were founded by two donors who wanted to answer the question, how can we give as effectively as possible? And since then, over 50,000 donors have used our research to donate a collective amount over $500 million to our recommended charities. Really appreciate our supporters, some of whom have joined us on this call. So thank you. We're really excited about the impact that we've had over the last 12 years. Each year we publish a short list of top charities to help donors give with confidence. We prioritize doing intense research into a small number of highly promising organizations. And the top charities list that we published most recently a few weeks ago is the product of thousands of hours of review and vetting. Our goal is to help donors give confidently so they can know that their donations will be used by an organization that's trustworthy and working on an effective program like fighting malaria, treating parasitic worms, delivering vitamin A supplements, and giving cash transfers to people in need. We believe our top charities are highly cost-effective and in need of additional funding. And we currently recommend 8 groups that all focus on low-income countries because we found that charitable dollars can go furthest in the poorest parts of the world. Our top charities also focus on global health and poverty alleviation because of the strong evidence of effectiveness, cost-effectiveness, and tractability, or donors' ability to have an impact with the dollars that they donate in that space. So with that brief introduction to what GiveWell is, I'm going to turn it over to my colleague Natalie Crispin to talk a little bit more about the 2019 top charities list and the work that we did this year to identify them.
Thanks, Catherine, and thanks everyone for joining us today. I want to give you just a brief overview before we get into more questions from you. So this year, our top charities are all organizations that have been on our list before, and this illustrates the importance of their work and our continued confidence in them. We're thrilled to be continuing to support and recognize their excellent work. Each year, we continue to take in new information and reprioritize how to direct funding among our top charities. And one thing not everyone knows about GiveWell is that although we recommend 8 top charities, we also prioritize among them to identify the highest priority funding needs at any given period, at any given time. Right now, we think that Malaria Consortium's seasonal malaria chemo prevention program has the highest priority need among our top charities. And this is a program where Malaria Consortium trained health workers go to door to door during the malaria season to provide young children with medication to prevent malaria. The health workers administer the first dose and then instruct caregivers on how to complete the treatment over the following days. Malaria Consortium and its partners then monitor the effectiveness of their work by looking into whether the mosquitoes are developing resistance to the treatment and by surveying a random selection of parents to check what proportion of children who have been targeted by the program have actually received the medication. According to our research, it's a highly cost-effective intervention. We estimate that a donation of $2,300 will avert one death. And it's one that needs additional funding. So we estimate that Malaria Consortium will have a funding gap at the end of this year of about $36 million over the next 3 years for SMC. We generally have a good handle on how we think they'll spend it. And we believe they've been a good partner for us to work with. And we've really checked them out and believe that they're really good on all of the things that we've looked into. So if you want to give to a top charity right now, our top recommendation is to give to Malaria Consortium's SMC program. The work that we do on Malaria Consortium is indicative of our ongoing work to direct funding where it is needed most. And we think that the best choice that donors can make is to maximize the impact of their gift, is to give to grants to recommended charities at GiveWell's discretion. And that's a pot of funding that we allocate to a top charity or charities that need it when it's granted each quarter. And this allows you as a donor to not stay up to date on where we think donations can be used most effectively at any given moment and allow us to give it to the place where we think it can be used most effectively.
Great. Thank you so much, Natalie. I'm now going to turn over to Q&A, starting with some of the questions that we received prior to the call. The first question is a question from Carrie. The question is, coverage of the Giving Pledge suggested that the huge influx of tech money changes the overall landscape and reduces the need for, quote, normal donors. Is that true, or how far off are we quantitatively from that being true?
Natalie? Yeah, so a key part of our process is to look into how much we think any top charity can use in addition to the funding that we expect that they will receive from other sources. And we think there's a lot of room for individual donors of all sizes to contribute to the world's most pressing problems. At our top charities alone, we estimate that the total funding need, we get this from looking at what's above and beyond what we expect them to receive from current donors, we think that total is in excess of $550 million.
Great, thanks, Natalie. The next question is from Eric, and the question is, as a rough estimate, how many standout charities do you think will become top charities in the future, either of the current ones or in general over time?
Right, so a little bit of context here on our standout charities. Although the number of top charities we recommend is fairly small, we review a large number of organizations in that process to find and continue to identify new top charities. We consider some of the groups that we look at through this process to be exceptional relative to the vast majority of organizations. And although they don't meet our top charity standards, we name these organizations to be standout charities and recognize their exceptional status. In all cases, the groups that are named as standout charities have entered our review process as potential top charities. We don't seek standout charities as a goal separate from that process. And we check in with each of our standout charities once per year to ask them if there's any new information that might cause us to consider reassessing those groups as potential top charities. For example, a new study of their program or a change in the way they work. A couple of examples where we may reopen our look at some of our standouts is that we recently completed some work to model the cost effectiveness of iron fortification. And so there are several standout charities that we have on our list now who work on that program, and we may revisit those as part of that new information for us on the cost effectiveness. Another example is that we're expecting a new randomized controlled trial looking at the evidence for the Dispensers for Safe Water program, and we expect results in mid-2020. So we'll be revisiting the case for making them a top charity in the next year. And then finally, if you're interested more in our standout charities and how we think about them, we recently, at the beginning of November, released a blog post explaining this, which I recommend for more information.
Great. Thanks, Natalie. The next question is from Martin. How does GiveWell factor in uncertainty in its cost effectiveness model and charity recommendations?
Yeah, this is a tough one. Our cost effectiveness model relies on many uncertain inputs, and so that can range from directly measured effect sizes where we have confidence intervals, and those give us a good sense for the amount of uncertainty. But then there's also intuitive guesses where a wide range of values appear to be plausible to us. And so our goal in these models is to come up with best guesses where we're really trying to figure out what's our guess of what the best estimate of cost effectiveness is. And we implement that not by taking the academic evidence at face value, but instead by adjusting results to account for the idea that less robust evidence is likely to overestimate impact. Given the uncertainty in our cost effectiveness models, we also look outside the model to qualitative assessments of organizational strength. And we use those when making decisions, particularly when modeled cost effectiveness is similar between two top charities. And there's also a significant amount of uncertainty in those assessments as well. And so we're using two sources that we know have quite a large amount of uncertainty, but that we're using in conjunction with each other to make more robust decisions. A couple other notes is that we make our cost effectiveness model and other inputs into the process public on our website, and people can put in their own inputs to see what results they get. And then we try as much as we can to be transparent about where we're uncertain and how we're making judgment calls and what those are based on.
Great, thanks, Natalie. And just a reminder, two ways to submit additional questions, one via the Zoom chat interface and the other via info@givewell.org. Have another question from Salim, which is, what are GiveWell's strategic priorities looking forward over the next 3 years? Ellie, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, thanks, Kat, and great question. So the overarching goal that GiveWell has over the next few years is to increase the impact we have and maximize the well-being of the people the programs that GiveWell serves are trying to help. And so we expect to do that through a few different pathways. First, we see a big opportunity to expand our research in order to find better giving opportunities. That's both in terms of finding more high programs that are backed by strong evidence and are cost effective that we think will lead to new top charities, and also through expanding the scope of GiveWell's research to focus on what are potentially higher risk, but then potentially higher upside types of opportunities. Traditionally, GiveWell has really focused on direct delivery interventions. So things where a donor's funds go directly to buy a product, the charity can then distribute that product en masse, and it's fairly straightforward to measure the direct impact. We think it's quite possible that donors could have more impact by supporting activities that could cause governments to change the way in which, or the laws that they have. And so we have called this area public health regulation. We're interested in exploring whether giving to organizations that try and advocate for and support the enactment and enforcement of laws that improve public health things like laws that focus on tobacco, lead regulation, and more could potentially be very cost effective. We're not sure whether or not we'll find those, but we may, and if we do, we would be excited to find, you know, new ways to move money very cost effectively. Probably what's going to be necessary for both of those goals on the research side of things is increasing the capacity and capability of our staff. And so it remains the case that our number one priority for GiveWell on the research side in the near future is recruitment and development of new researchers and then the researchers who are currently on our team so that we're able to broaden our research in the way that I just described. On the other side of this equation, you know, we GiveWell has impact by finding great opportunities and then directing money to them. So the other half of this equation is trying to grow the amount of funding that GiveWell directs to its recommendations. For most of GiveWell's history, we were nearly 100% a research organization, and the outreach we did was very much reactive to organic interest from donors who found us. Over the last 2 years, we've slowly built up a stronger outreach function. We hired a head of growth, major gifts team. We've hired a VP of marketing, and we're now well positioned with that leadership to build a plan that we hope can drive a lot more money to our recommendations over the next few years.
Thanks, Ellie. That's a great segue into the next two questions, which I'm going to pair from Christine and Mark. Christine asked, you mentioned a slight shift in branding tactics, including experimentally showing more pictures. What are the updates on that? And Mark asked about our marketing plans for 2020.
Yeah, these are also great questions. You know, so far, what we've done has all been very experimental. We've tried some things and we're trying to see what results come back. That includes, you know, if you go to GiveWell's homepage for the first time in our history, there's a picture on our homepage. We've been sending out more email that includes pictures and more narrative accounts, we hope, very truthfully framed to help people understand in a more concrete way what some of our top charities do. And, you know, the big focus, though, of 2020 is trying to build the baseline for GiveWell's marketing plan. And what that really means is trying to get a sense of what types of returns we can get from proactive outreach. Historically, all of the interest we've had has essentially been organic, meaning it's come to us without us doing anything proactive. And therefore, we just don't know what will happen when we go out and try to proactively make more people aware of GiveWell, bring them to our website, and hopefully convert them to donors. And so the vast majority of the work that we expect to do in the next year or so is going to be focused on building the infrastructure necessary to measure the results of what we do, and then testing a variety of different types of actions, whether it's advertising through different paid marketing channels, thinking about ways to support ambassadors at companies, but you know, all with an eye towards trying to get a handle on what type of return we can expect from initial investment, hopefully to then know what types of activities we can scale during giving season of 2020 and beyond.
Thanks, Ellie. We have a question from Mark, looking for more information about GiveWell's thinking on policy advocacy. Ellie briefly touched on this, but Josh, do you want to share some more context on how we're thinking about that?
Yeah, so Ellie mentioned how this fits into our bigger picture goals. So GiveWell is moving a substantial amount of money to recommendations that we believe are highly cost effective. And in order for our research to have greater impact, we need to find opportunities that are even more cost effective than those. And so that's why we started to look into policy advocacy with the idea that perhaps a smaller amount of funds from donors could affect a very large amount of funds from governments and have a big impact on things such as a population's health. So some of the work we did on this in the first half of 2019, first we started with topics in what we call public health regulations, so trying to change laws relevant to population's health, because we thought that was an area that was relatively tractable for us to do further research on, because it was closer to the research that we've done in the past and was a good place to start out in policy advocacy work. So we looked at a large number of potential public health issues to work on, and the main thing that we did to prioritize among them was considered first, you know, what is the burden of various illnesses, and then second, how much philanthropic funding is going towards policy advocacy work on those causes. And basically, we were looking for issues that had a high burden of disease and did not have a large amount of philanthropic funding. So we identified five promising areas: air pollution, lead regulation, micronutrient fortification, alcohol policy, and pesticide regulations. So that's kind of the first round of work. We haven't been able to prioritize this since in the last few months due to competing research needs. We're planning to come back to this in 2020 and hope to have more to say then.
Thanks, Josh. We also got a question from Christine. More speculatively, what do you think about FHI-like research into changing people's moral inclinations through future technology or gene editing?
Yeah, so I think that's this kind of work is outside of the scope of what we're currently doing. It's not something that we've thought a lot about, but it seems like a more speculative and more thorny issue than most of what we're looking at in terms of expanding our work into things like policy advocacy or starting to look at other cause areas such as family planning and education and nutrition. So I don't expect us to have much more to say on that in the near term.
Great, thanks, Josh. Coming back to GiveWell's process in 2019, Fausto submitted a question looking for more information about errors that we've made this year or corrections that we've made. Natalie, you wanna take this one?
Yeah, so there are a few things I'd do differently if I could go back. A couple of examples. So this year we switched from using one data source that for looking at vitamin A deficiency and switching to a new data source in our cost effectiveness model. We think the new data source is better, and I think there's some work we could have done to determine that earlier, and it did make a big difference. So I think it would have been better to recognize and prioritize that work earlier. Another one is that we knew going into this year that we wanted to redo our model for estimating the burden of parasitic worms and how that differs between different locations and over time. We didn't manage to finish that work, and it's left us with greater uncertainty about which deworming programs we're likely to recommend funding to in the future. It happened to work out this year that it didn't affect our decision, and that was largely due to specifics of what top charities had funding gaps for, but that was somewhat of a fluke, and I think it would have been better to get through that work and have a bit more clarity for the future. I now think that we should be going further than we have to understand the strengths and weaknesses of the data one of our top charities, the Against Malaria Foundation, has collected on its programs. AMF has been one of the largest recipients of funding from donors using GiveWell's research. And we have identified some concerns, some open questions with their monitoring before, which we talked about on our blog and back in 2016. And there's just some open questions that we'd like to be able to answer. And so reviewing information that AMF has recently made available to us and interviewing AMF's partners who have collected that data is now a high priority for us in the next few months.
Great, thanks, Natalie. Again, just a reminder to please submit any questions that you have. We want to make sure that we're able to answer anything. And now is a good moment to let us know if there's something that you want to talk about on this call. The next question that I have is from Andre. And the question is, can you discuss how you think about the disagreements between GiveWell's recommendations and the recommendations of other reputable organizations, such as The Life You Can Save?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a tough one to answer simply because, I think GiveWell and The Life You Can Save run different types of research processes to arrive at their conclusions. And I don't know enough about The Life You Can Save's research process to have a clear view of how they reach the decisions they do. In GiveWell's process, what we try to do is gather as much information as we can about specific interventions and the evidence behind them to have a sense of what types of impacts we would expect from the program. We then go to the specific charities and really dive into their operations to try and formulate an estimate of what they accomplish. So, you know, what they accomplish by executing that intervention and how it compares to the program that was studied in academia. You know, we gather financial information from the charities themselves to come up with our best guesses of, you know, the cost that is required for the charity to achieve that impact. We also talk extensively to the charity to understand how they would use additional funding and where the next dollar would be used. And then finally, we explicitly compare all the charities that we've considered to each other to try to come up with a ranking of which organizations and which activities we should recommend most highly. And so, you know, that's the process that we use to arrive at the recommendations that we're making.
Thanks, Ellie. And we're down to our last few questions. So again, if you have a question, now is a great time to submit it so that we can make sure that we get to it on the call. The next question that I have is from Michael. In your February blog post on how your research is evolving, you mentioned potential research into, quote, one-off big bets. Do you have any specific areas that you started looking into in 2019 or are planning to look into in 2020? How do you scan for and research these opportunities?
Yeah, so we've not made a lot of progress on looking into one-off big bets this year. I think the example that we gave in that blog post was looking into gene drives that could potentially reduce malaria. Instead, you know, where we focus so far this year on kind of the new research areas has been substantially on the side of looking into policy causes, as I discussed earlier. So no major updates yet on the one-off big bets.
All right. Thanks, Josh. We have a question from Christine. What do you think about Momentum, the new EA app that promotes feel-good giving to top charities?
So we haven't interacted significantly with Momentum. It's not a group that we know very well. That said, I think that the challenge of figuring out how to engage more people in the topic of effective giving, you know, what will interest them, what will bring them in, how can we, you know, motivate people to give and better understanding how they're approaching their giving is just a really challenging question. I know it's something that we debate internally, and we then look to the outside for information from others, you know, others that have conducted market research, others that have engaged with donors. And so I think it's a really great thing to have more like-minded people engaging in this challenge of trying to figure out, you know, how to bring effective giving to a wider audience.
Great, thanks, Ellie. This brings us to the end of the questions that folks have submitted. Want to thank everyone for joining us today. As a reminder, if you asked a question that you'd prefer to remove from the recording, please email info@givewell.org in the next 24 hours so that we can be sure to do that. We'll also be sending a follow-up survey on the call and would appreciate you taking the time to fill that out if you're willing. Thank you again, everyone. Really appreciate you taking the time to join us. If you have any questions that come to mind after the call, please also feel free to send them to info@givewell.org, and we're happy to get your question in writing as well. All right, thank you.